Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
The House Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development to order, and get right into it by opening a public hearing on House Bill 3674. Senator Edwards, thank you for joining us. If there's anyone you'd like to bring with you, please do so. And Beth, give us a quick recap on the bill.
House Bill 3674 that you have in front of you, for the record, has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact statement on the bill. It allows electricity generated from facility using biomass that became operational before January 1st, 1995 to comply with Oregon's Renewable Portfolio Standard if located in Oregon and meets requirements for qualified facility under FERC Policies Act of 1975. Authorizes facility generating less electricity from direct combustion of municipal solid waste operational before January 1, 1995. And located in Oregon to comply with the RPS, and authorizes PUC to allow full recovery of costs by utilities and prudent energy investments related to hydrogen power stations.
Beth, Senator Edwards, still not used to saying that. We're glad you're willing to come back to your roots here today.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Edwards. I'm the state senator in West Eugene, North Eugene, and Junction City. We've got a great bill before you today. It comes from some vigorous discussions that we had over the interim following the veto by the governor of another great bill, in my opinion, House Bill 2940, which was passed overwhelmingly in the House and the Senate. But we had some disagreements with the governor, and he vetoed the bill. In the interim, I had a discussion with him personally, and then we had a work group that we formed and brought the stakeholders together and have come up with this consensus piece of legislation. It's pretty simple. It would still, like 2940, would allow legacy biomass plants, those plants prior to 1995, to qualify for the renewable portfolio standard. But the difference, the essence of this bill is that those credits, the RECs, would be bankable. They couldn't be used to comply right away, but they would be bankable until 2026, at which point they could be used to comply with the RPS. There's some other aspects of the bill that other members of this committee have worked really hard on. Representative Gilliam, especially, has really worked hard, and I believe he teamed up with Representative Bailey on the including hydrogen power plants in the RPS. So I'm going to wrap my testimony up there, because this is, I believe, a consensus piece of legislation. If in the next few minutes I find out that it's anything but that, I won't be very happy. And I'm happy to answer any questions, or you could ask questions of the parade of people that will be coming up to explain their support.
Thank you, Senator Edwards. I think that's a good description of the people who are following you. But let's ask the committee if there are any questions for you. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment to say thank you for your work on this and for your willingness to work with me on the hydrogen piece. We're going to have an update on that I suspect you're not going to be able to be part of, but I will share that information with you. And I hope that we can also have the same update when we have action over on your side. But the question I had, you mentioned that you'd had a personal meeting with the governor. Mm-hmm. And my question is, what's he like?
He's a nice fellow.
Oh.
Thank you.
Have him stop by sometime.
Some of the other folks forward, Link Cannon, Jeff Bissonnette, Ivo Trummer. Gentlemen can decide whatever the appropriate sequence is.
Chair Reed, members of this committee, for the record, Ivo Trummer, Energy Policy Advisor to the Governor. We came before you just a few weeks ago about this bill. Back then it was LC-123. I think Senator Edwards said most of it. It's the product of a work group a series of work group meetings. It has consensus all along from all stakeholders. It brings those vintage biomass facilities into the RPS, also Representative Gilliam's hydrogen part and municipal solid waste. We are very happy and very grateful to you, Mr. Chair, for allowing the bill to go forward, and to Senator Edwards for sitting down with us even after the veto. So with that, I'll close. If there are any questions about the technical aspect of the bill, I'd be happy to address those.
Let's hear from Mr. Cannon and Mr. Bissonnette, and we can come back for questions.
Hey, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak here today in support of this bill. My name is Link Cannon, the Oregon Forest Industries Council. We're very appreciative of all the work that went into this, from the governor's office, from Senator Edwards. Representative Cannon's office was represented on the working group, and the Senate President's office. So we had a good group of legislative folks, as well as utilities, Renewable Northwest Project, CUB, and others. So it was a very rewarding and nice to be able to get to a bill that we could all agree to. So with that, I'm here to answer questions, and we're very pleased to have Oregon's renewable energy pioneers recognized under Oregon's RPS with the passage of this bill.
Yeah. Mr. Bissonnette?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. Also here to add our voice as part of the consensus and as part of the agreement. And we'd be, for us, the main issue was making sure that we did recognize a role for kind of the legacy or vintage facilities, but did not undercut the room for new facilities. And that was the main issue we had with 2940, is we thought that was out of balance. This bill is, in our view, a much better balance, and one we're happy to support. And also like to state for the record, we never had a problem with the hydrogen language, and that is in there word for word. My understanding was it was, but Representative Gilliam is a much better testament. But that was never a problem from our point of view. So, but again, happy to support the bill and urge your aye vote and get this underway.
Thank you, Mr. Bissonnette. Any questions for this group? Nothing, Representative Gilliam?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Wonderful
very much.
Testimony.
Thank you very much. Let's call Margie Hoffman and Hannes. And Ellie Booth, please.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman, and I represent the Renewable Northwest Project. And I just want to echo what everybody else has said today. We participated in the stakeholder process. I want to thank in particular Scott Bolton at PacifiCorp for coming up with this creative idea to allow in pre-1995 biomass facilities, but also make sure that we adhere to the intent of the RPS, which is to drive new renewable production to 2025. So I want to say thank you to everybody that was involved, and good bill should pass.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Ann Hannes. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and in the spirit of collaboration, Ellie and I even coordinated our outfits today.
Nicely done.
I failed.
We want to commend the efforts of the biomass work group. We believe that the compromise is a reasonable one, and it recognizes the importance of biomass facilities, especially for those facilities that are in rural areas that are struggling. And also this benefits the Marion County Waste to Energy Facility. They combust about 13 megawatts of energy a year. That's enough to power 13,000 homes. It reduces carbon emissions by avoiding methane, and it also employs 36 people at family wage jobs. And one of the things that they're very proud of is this program also allows them to have a very strong integrated solid waste management program that gives them the highest recycling rate in the state. So for those reasons, we urge your support of this bill.
Thank you very much. Ms. Booth.
Thank you, Chair Reed and members of the committee. My name is Ellie Booth, and I am with Covanta Energy regarding the representing the facility in Marion County. And very much would like to, first of all, extend gratitude to the members of the committee, but also to Senator Edwards and the governor's office in working with us on this compromise language. This bill represents a compromise, and it allows a limited municipal solid waste, limited combustion facilities into the RPS. It includes Arbil and Marion County. The reason the importance of that is Marion County derives all of their recycling funds and solid waste funds and all their programs from the electricity revenues that are generated from this facility. Energy from waste has been an accepted source of renewable energy in Europe. It's very accepted in Europe as well as at the federal level. It is currently recognized in Senator Bingaman bills and Congressman Waxman's bills as well as the recent executive order by President Obama that recognizes the renewability of municipal solid waste. So appreciate your support and time on this.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Any questions for this panel? I don't see any. Thank you very much. Our last person who signed up is Sandra Bishop.
Good afternoon. Thank you. For the record, my name is Sandra Bishop. I'm here today representing Community Energy Systems. It's a small developer of sustainable renewable energy projects throughout the western states, mostly in Oregon, Colorado, New Mexico. In Oregon, we're developing projects that convert waste to cleaner transportation fuels and electricity. And these projects are expected to produce about 80 million gallons per year of synthetic diesel. And this is a fuel blend stock that can be used either as liquid fuel and also to generate electricity. The liquid fuel will qualify under the low carbon fuel standard that's being developed. We understand that there has been a compromise worked out on this bill, and we're fully supportive of that. But we hope that in the future, the legislature will understand the difference between the more traditional technologies of combustion, especially when you're talking about using waste or waste to energy or waste to power. There's a significant difference between combustion and conversion of solid waste. So we hope in the future that the legislature can see clear at some point to incentivize non-combustion thermal processes. And I just want to read you a section out of the California Public Resources Code, section 25741. For the purposes of their RPS, solid waste conversion means a technology that uses a non-combustion thermal process to convert solid waste to a clean burning fuel for the purpose of generating electricity. It must meet the following criteria. The technology produces no discharges of air contaminants or emissions, including greenhouse gases under certain definitions, and also the technology produces no discharge to the surface, to the land, or to the water. So we hope in future we can continue to refine these bills. So thank you for passing this one today.
Thank you, Ms. Bishop. I imagine that's the nature of the legislature, always refining things. I'm guessing since you're leaving, there aren't any questions for you.
But, doesn't
look like Representative Richardson?
I would have a question for you.
Certainly.
There's a company in Southern Oregon called Biochar, which is currently making arrangements to open such a facility, and I met with them 2 weeks ago. And I mean, it sounds like a really important technology because they can take toxic waste, and because it's not, there's no emissions, they use tremendously high heat, and it generates carbon at the end of it, which it can be used for planting and for other things. The toxic nature is gone essentially, and they do produce electricity, and that it's a kind of technology that we really need to be looking at promoting because it has such benefits with very low downside. So thank you for bringing that forward. I didn't know if it applied to this bill or not.
Yeah.
In fact, could I just a second?
Sure.
I've read through the bill, but how should this bill have been changed if you were in charge of it so that it would include such technology?
Well, I would say at this point that this bill should not be changed in any way. nor should it be. I'm here today simply to put something into the record for the future when you look at refining and looking at these more advanced technologies. We have to do things step by step, and this has been very carefully crafted and worked out, so I wouldn't suggest any changes to this. But in future, we can come back to you with technical experts and help you with specific wording in the future.
Thank you. Please do.
Thank you very much. That completes the list of people who have signed up to testify on this bill, unless there's anyone else who indicates in the next few seconds that they want to testify on this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilliam?
I think we've got Jack Robertson down, correct?
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
I'm sorry. We missed someone. Mr. Robertson? Thank you for pointing that out. I see him on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jack Robertson. I'm the chairman of the Northwest Hydrogen Alliance. We're involved in the development of new technology known as hydrogen hubs, and the piece of the bill that's before you today also includes very important acknowledgement of this new technology and the potential of putting hydrogen hub and hydrogen fueling station related technology into this bill and have it qualify for RFP standards. I'm simply here to update you, if you like, on where we are with this new technology. We're quite excited. The fact, when we talked to you last, we were beginning a new regional study of this with utilities in the region. We have finished a preliminary study that has been completed as of the end of last September, and we are finalizing the study working with Bonneville, a number of utilities around the region, by the end of March. What we hope to do after that study is move toward development and deployment of the technology you're seeing. I'm handed out some graphics of a conceptual design of the first prototype hydrogen hub that came from this study. And the idea here is that we think, revolutionize the way hydrogen works, make it very practical by utilizing power, off-peak energy from the Columbia River system, but also wind and solar power. Integrate that and create the world's densest non-carbon fuel by combining hydrogen from water and nitrogen from the air into what we're calling green, in other words, totally renewable anhydrous ammonia. This is precisely the same anhydrous ammonia that's put on crops all over the world to feed the world, but it's from all renewable resources as opposed to the anhydrous ammonia that is now made from coal and natural gas worldwide. So it has a zero carbon footprint, and when you use this as a fuel to generate power on peak, when it's worth many times more, that power, it comes with zero pollution. The only emissions are water vapor and nitrogen, which goes back into the atmosphere. So it's a completely closed loop. We recapture the water at the end for fuel. So there's a no net use of water, we believe, or very little loss of water in this equation. And in a bargain, hydrogen hubs also create highly valuable products. The green anhydrous ammonia can be used as a power generation fuel. It can also be used as a fertilizer, as I indicated, an organic fertilizer. And thirdly, we create some very high value, it turns out, ultra high purity oxygen that can be used in the silicon manufacturing industry, places like Intel and elsewhere. So we think the economics of this is looking good. I want to thank members of the committee, who particularly Mr. Gilliam, Mr. Bailey, and others who have been involved with this for a long period of time. Their support's been very helpful. And I just want to, even though I'm representing a nonprofit, I'm not here to convey a feeling about support or not for a bill. I can't do that. I just want to be here to answer any questions you may have with respect to the development of the technology. So thank you very much for your interest in it.
Thank you very much. And here, I thought we were going to be able to just pass the bill, and now we have science class again, which is great.
Sorry.
Which is great. No, don't apologize. It's good. Are there questions? Jim Gilling, no questions?
No.
Well, we appreciate the update. Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a very brief comment to say how much I appreciate Mr. Robertson making the trip down here repeatedly to help us understand the nature of this emerging technology. It's very exciting. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I was going to second that. I think it's very exciting to see the possibilities emerging in Oregon particularly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I don't think we've missed anyone else. I apologize for that, Representative Gilliam. There aren't any other comments. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3674 and open a work session on House Bill 3674. Representative Gilliam?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'd be interested if it meets with your approval in a motion to send the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3674 be adopted and moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation, as I was saying.
Thank you. Representative Gilliam moves that House Bill 3674 be passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? I don't see any. Motion is adopted. House Bill 3674 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Gilliam, would you like to carry the bill?
Yeah, it would be my honor, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Gilliam will carry and close the work session on House Bill 3674. We'll move next. Representative Bailey, if you are ready, we'll move to a public hearing on House Bill 3675. Open the public hearing. And while Representative Bailey makes a transition, Beth, if you'd like to give us a summary, please.
Mr. Chair, members of committee, House Bill 3675, for the record, you have a dash one amendment in front of you, which you do have a no revenue impact and fiscal statement was issued on. It stipulates that authorization to the director of the Department of Energy to delay or suspend energy efficiency and sustainable technology loan programs that would not apply to pilot programs, authorizes director of State Department of Energy to establish by rule-based efficiency package fee for East loans. The dash one amendment in front of you, it inserts some numbers that requires fee not exceed 10% of estimated economic benefit for base energy efficiency package, requires that at least once every 6 months the director shall estimate anticipated demand for East loans and submit the declaration to the state treasurer and establishes effective date for portions of the act.
Thank you very much. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jules Bailey. I have the honor of representing House District 42 in Inner East Side, Portland. House Bill 3675 is a cleanup bill, as we've discussed before in this committee, to the House Bill 2626 of last session, the Energy Efficiency and Sustainable Technology Act. And this bill helps the program in a number of ways. It helps clarify a few provisions within the program. It also helps the program better connect to some of the local efforts, as well as to the federal dollars that have the potential to come down the pipeline here for job creation around clean energy and energy efficiency in the state of Oregon. I want to walk you through a couple of details on the bill. I want to thank, first of all, the Department of Energy. They've done yeoman's work on working with us to make sure that we get to a place where this bill is going to work. And I want to describe for you a conceptual amendment. I also really want to thank the Public Utilities Commission and Portland General Electric in particular for working with us to help clarify a few provisions.
And just so that we are not giving a heart attack to our able committee staff, I would suggest that you were emphasizing the word describing a conceptual amendment, not that the conceptual amendment is going to be adopted here. Is that right?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you for teeing up my next set of comments. So, committee, you'll see in front of you the dash one amendment. This amendment simply fills in the blanks that are in the existing bill in House Bill 3675. In working with our partners and making sure that we're able to get the language right within House Bill 3675, we have already in the process today of working to draft an amendment that we will do on the Senate side. And we have agreement from our partners that they are willing to wait and trust that we will get that done on the Senate side. That amendment will include a clarification on the on-bill financing system to remove the word system and to make sure that the PUC has the flexibility to work with the utilities to make sure that that is done right. It'll include a change in Section 10 that clarifies that the information that we're looking for is aggregated information, not personal information. We don't want to be infringing on anybody's privacy, and make sure that that information is system-wide, and also a cleanup to make sure that we're not implying that the investor-owned utilities own this program, but for those that have customers enrolled in it. The other part of that amendment that we'll be doing on the Senate side is working with the Department of Energy to insert some language that's a change that would clarify that there is some money that was allocated in the last legislative session already to them through the lottery bond process that this body allocated to the Department of Energy for this program. It helps clarify that if that money is not there, they're not on the hook for implementing a program that they don't have sufficient funds for. So that language will go in on the Senate side You'll be hearing from a couple of folks today, and I want to just take a quick moment and thank them and tee that up. You'll be hearing from Derek Smith from the City of Portland. The Portland Clean Energy Works program already has boots on the ground, already retrofitting people's homes, as you're going to hear, already creating jobs in Oregon, and these are good family wage jobs with good standards, and has really become a national leader and is what the federal government has been looking to in clean energy programs. The City of Portland has been able to move aggressively on this because of an allocation of ARRA funds. EAST and this bill help allow that system to be able to go statewide, to be able to create jobs across utility territories and in rural communities, and make sure that this program has the economic effect that it was intended to have in the 2009 legislative session. And I really want to thank all of the Clean Energy Works Portland team, Derek, Aaron Berg, the city staff that has been involved with this, Susan Anderson, the mayor, for all their leadership and hard work in getting this off the ground and making sure that we're already providing a benefit to people. So without any more ado, unless there's questions, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to turn the podium over.
Thank you, Representative Bailey. Are there questions before you depart? I don't see any. The three people we have on our sign-up list, given that there are three chairs, we can call them all up together. Martha Pellegrino, Derek Smith, and Brendan McCarthy.
Hi, good afternoon, members of the committee. Chair Reed, Brendan McCarthy with Portland General Electric. I just want to make some very quick comments echoing Representative Bailey. First of all, I want to indicate that we appreciate Representative Bailey's willingness to entertain some small changes to the bill to clarify those pieces that he talked about. Number two, we're excited about this program. We're excited. We're working closely with Portland, and we are looking forward to seeing the energy data that we get from this program, so we're looking forward to that as this program moves on. And as Representative Bailey stated, there are these few changes in Section 7 and Section 10. We look forward to working with him on Senate side to make sure those get put in place. And with that, changes on Senate side, I think we can support the bill.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy.
Thank you, Chair Reed, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Martha Pellegrino, representing the City of Portland. Thank you, Representative Bailey, for your kind introduction. And I'm available to answer questions, but we'll cede the substantive testimony to our project manager, Derek Smith. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Derek Smith. I'm the program manager for Clean Energy Works Portland. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today in support of EAST. I'm going to give you a brief update about our Clean Energy Works pilot and show you how this program demonstrates the promise of what EAST can do throughout the state. First, some background on Clean Energy Works. Clean Energy Works Portland is a pilot program that will help 500 qualified Portland homeowners finance and install energy efficiency upgrades. The pilot offers homeowners access to low-cost financing for improvements. The early phase of the pilot began last June. Thus far, we have experienced an overwhelmingly positive response to the pilot. Over 600 people, including customers of all three utilities, have signed up with very little cost and very little promotional effort. This week, we sent a mailer to over 15,000 PGE and Pacific Power customers to make sure that we are engaging all customers of all the utilities. We have found that the average project cost is around $10,000 per home, which translates to floor, wall, attic insulation, and a new furnace or heat pump and or hot water system. These loans are then paid back over 20 years on the resident's utility bill. To date, Clean Energy Works has completed 84 home energy assessments, which have been converted to 35 loans. We are now entering the largest phase of the pilot, in which we're targeting another 200 loans over the next roughly 3 months. While the benefits to residents of these homes is clear, it is the jobs being created that will stimulate the economy. We have just designated training programs, laborers and carpenters, and graduates of those programs are being prepared for hire. Based on our expectations, contractors will likely be beginning to hire this month. And moreover, these jobs will create career pathways and also economic opportunities for historically underrepresented communities. We can attribute all this success thus far to the key public and private partners who have collaborated with us to make this project work: the Energy Trust of Oregon, Shore Bank Enterprise Cascadia, PGE, Pacific Power, Northwest Natural, Multnomah County, Work Systems, Inc., Green for All, and a host of organized labor and community-based organizations. I'd like to particularly recognize the utilities for their productive engagement in this effort. And now, share how this may go statewide through the East framework. So in partnership with the governor and the Oregon Department of Energy, we recently applied for a $75 million grant from the U.S. Department of Energy. If fully funded, we would significantly engage private capital, make financing available to commercial buildings, as well as tens of thousands of homes, and create 11,000 jobs over the next 6 years. This grant would bring this program to scale statewide. Many jurisdictions throughout the state, including Klamath and Lake Counties, Hood River, Astoria, and the entire Portland metro region, have signed on to commit funding to this shared objective. EAST is the enabling framework for this effort. It is a reason why we have attracted national attention and that we are in a good position to hopefully receive large federal investment. I'd like to close by very deeply thanking Representative Bailey for his leadership on this issue and members of the committee for your support of this program. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much. I think the committee does deserve good recognition because we spent a lot of time on this in the last session. So
on my own behalf,
I would extend the thanks to all of the committee. One quick question I think I know the answer to, and be interested in what other members of the committee would be interested in. In the last sentence of one of the paragraphs on the first page, you said you sent a mailer to over 15,000 PGE and Pacific Power customers to make sure we're reaching customers of all three utilities. I assume the third is Northwest Natural?
Yes, correct.
Okay, thank you very much. Other questions? Representative Frederick.
Chair Reed, I'm curious. I have two things I would like to say. First of all, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing on this. It is very clear in my talking with folks in my neighborhood that they missed the first efforts in the 70s to get this conservation done. They have been dealing with high energy costs for 30 years plus. Mm-hmm. And in the house that I think you were with me at 9th and Killingsworth, apparently she says that her house is nice and snug right now and that the energy costs have just completely dropped out. This is a neighborhood where a lot of folks did not have the money to do the conservation or could not get the money because the banks were redlining them and were not able to get the loans to do things in the 70s when these things came up. So that was very good. Let me go again. This work has been very good. The jobs issue, though, is the one that I'm most interested in. I would ask, if possible, that you track where those jobs are and who's getting them.
Yes.
Because that same neighborhood has for young black men has an unemployment rate that's in the 50-60% range, and I want to get them jobs and I want them working on Mrs. Johnson's house down the street.
Yes.
So if we can get something done on that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah. No. Thank you for the comment. We are working very closely with NAMCO, with Urban League, with Verde, NEA, many others who are on a mayor-appointed committee to make sure that they are evaluating and helping us implement improvements to the way we're tracking data and to the our progress toward the Community Workforce Agreement, which all of those organizations and organized labor and other community groups signed on to make sure that there are opportunities for underserved populations to get access to the economic benefits here, and that there are good work standards in this effort. So right there with you. Appreciate the comment very much.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Representative Holby.
Thank you. I'm just following up with Representative Frederick. You had mentioned that you have designated training programs and there will be graduates coming from that. So I'm curious Who's doing the training? Who's running the training programs?
So the worker training programs are designated by the stakeholder committee. They are the ones that have been designated so far will be designated today are laborers and carpenters. They are affiliated with the pre-apprenticeship programs so that the pre-apprenticeship programs that have a graduation rate of 50% or greater of historically underserved populations will then go on to the worker training programs provided by laborers and carpenters and then be able to be hired by the contractors who are approved as within the pool of contractors that perform the GC functions for Clean Energy Works. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Further questions? I don't see any. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
I don't think we have anyone else who signed up to testify on this bill. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. So unless anyone indicates their interest now, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3675 and open a work session on House Bill 3675. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the dash ones dated February 2nd, 2010 to House Bill 3675.
Thank you. Representative Bailey moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 3675 dated February 2nd, 2010. Any discussion of those amendments? I don't see any. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries and the amendments are adopted. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3675 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Bailey moves House Bill 3675 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to put on the record during work session one more time that we do intend to make those final changes on the Senate side.
Thank you very much. Representative Gilliam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, and I'm sorry if this is a naive question, but when we say no revenue impact on the dash ones, we're saying that about the bill too, correct?
I believe that that's true, Representative Gilliam. The fiscal impact statement that references the dash one amendment assumes or is making commentary on the bill as amended with the
as
dash
amended.
Ones. Is that right, Beth?
Mr. Chair and Representative Gilliam, that is correct, that the dash one amendments are on the bill as amended for the revenue savings.
Very good. Further discussion? Very good. Is there any objection to the motion to send House Bill 3675 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation? I don't see any. Motion carries. House Bill 3675 as amended goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Bailey, I assume you might be a willing carrier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bailey will carry and we'll close the work session on House Bill 3675. I should have noted earlier, and I apologize, that the amendments that are being contemplated and prepared for House Bill 3633 that is dealing with hydrokinetic energy and the amendments dealing with economic gardening for House Bill 3644 are not ready, so we will be carrying both of those bills over to our next meeting on Tuesday. So those of you who might be waiting for that, I don't want you to wait in vain. And with that, we will move forward to House Bill 3605, open a public hearing on House Bill we'll open a work session on House Bill 3605. This is the bill we heard during our last meeting related to the Oregon Business Development Fund. And Beth, perhaps you can help us with a further summary.
Just for the record, there's a sub-referral on this bill to Ways and Means. And in front of you, you have the bill as well as the dash one amendment. You heard this bill in the second. There is a no revenue impact, and a fiscal statement was issued on the dash one amendment. The proposed dash one amendment deletes section 1, 2, and 3 of the bill, and it allows total amount of money loaned from Oregon Business Development Fund for a business development project to exceed 50% of project cost if two or more lenders have denied financing more than 50% of a project. And the only other available financing totals less than 50% as authorization to loan money from fund without a commitment from a commercial or private lender or local development group to participate in financing if two or more lenders have denied requests. Increases commission's director to approve loans for up to $250,000. Sunsets on July 1st, 2011. And there is a blank appropriates a blank amount to Oregon Business Development Department for biennium ending June 30th, 2012. It declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you. And that blank is the reason for the sub-referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. So I think that is the intention that Representative Doherty and her staff are aware of. If the committee wants to do that, we'll be able to send it to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, where our colleagues can determine whether there is the opportunity to add some funding to the fund. We'd heard about the need for that. So, is there a motion on the dash one amendments?
Chair, I move that we adopt dash one amendments to House Bill 3605. Have we got that right?
Yes. Thank you, Representative.
No, yes, 3605.
You got it. Representative Benz moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 3605. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Let's see. The motion carries. Dash one amendments are adopted, dated January 27, 2010, are adopted. Thank you. I think we'd be ready to send it to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee send House Bill 3605 and dash one amendments, so adopted, to the floor with a subsequent referral. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
To the Ways and Means.
Yes. Thank you. Representative Benz moves House Bill 3605 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
By prior reference.
Is there any discussion of the motion?
Was that an exact quote there?
That was my best effort to recall how to do that from last session. Was that okay?
No, it's good.
You need some help from the director, maybe. But, with that, I don't see any objection to the motion. The motion is adopted. House Bill 3605, as amended, we'll see if I can do it again, sent to the floor, due pass recommendation, and referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 3605. And open a public hearing on House Bill 3690.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3690 that you have in front of you defines residential qualifying systems and small commercial qualifying systems, changes definition of resource value to not include renewable energy certificates, authorizes PUC to increase capacity limit if 25 megawatt cumulative nameplate capacity is equal before pilot program is completed, authorizes PUC to adjust percentage goal for capacity deployed by residential and small commercial qualifying system, requires PUC to submit the first report to legislature no later than January 1st, 2011. It declares an emergency. You also have the proposed dash 2 amendment in front of you, which changes the sentence to read, the consumer thereafter may receive payments based upon removes the from electricity generated from the qualifying system at a rate equal to the resource value. It also reinstates language that would make systems participating pilot programs to, if adopted this amendment, not be eligible for the public purpose expenditures. There is a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the dash 2 amendment.
Thank you very much. We have a number of people who are interested in testifying on that, but we should start with PUC.
Yes.
Very good. We have the chair of both leads with us today. Mr. Sparling, thank you for being here, and thanks in advance for your explanation and testimony.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, I'm Lee Sparling. I'm director of the utility program at the Public Utility Commission. I think my job right now, at least, is to be available to try to explain any of the changes in the either House Bill 3690 or the amendments. Many of the changes, small wording changes, are designed to enable what we talked about at a prior hearing to deal with possible problems with running into FERC, that is, federal jurisdictional problems. We call them workarounds. A number of the wording changes are designed to allow the Commission to have the option to pick various ways of dealing with that potential jurisdictional issue. For example, there's some language that is designed to allow a bidding mechanism to be used, where the rates would be set not so much in a tariff that's filed by the Commission or with the Commission, but through a process that is run with the utilities. And so there are a number of wording changes there that are designed to enable those workarounds.
Is it reasonable, Mr. Sprouse, to say that the intent of this, I guess to a certain extent, it's our view to say this, but is it reasonable to say that the effect of this is consistent with our intent not to direct the PUC to pick any of the options, but to give you, the PUC, the ability to choose the best option consistent with the intent to explore how a feed-in tariff will work?
Chair Reed, yes, that's exactly right.
Thank you very much. Perhaps you could take us through the effect of the amendment and any other relevant changes.
As Ms. Herzog mentioned, there are a couple of other things that I'd like to flag with respect to what the bill as printed is designed to do. It gives the commission the authority to go beyond 25 megawatts for the pilot program, if that makes sense. It clarifies some of the size categories that were addressed to some extent in the bill in the 2009 session. That is that of the 25 megawatt pilot size, 75% of that is now supposed to come from specifically from projects that range anywhere between 0 and 100 kilowatts in size. Those are projects that are defined as either residential or small commercial projects. The previous version of the bill was a little unclear as to how that 75% requirement was to be applied, and this helps to clear that up. Finally, there is a minor change in the timing. The bill originally, that is 3039, was not quite clear on when the programs need to be available to customers. This bill clears things up so that the commission needs to get its work done in time, so that the utilities can be all prepared, so that everything is ready to go and customers can start participating beginning on July 1st. With respect to the amendments, the Dash 2 amendments do two things. The first is to clear up some language regarding whether the customer is entitled to payment for all of the generation from the project that they may have. One of the workarounds that we talked about in the prior hearing had to do with the option for customers to work this and to be able to avoid the FERC jurisdictional problem through something like net metering. Under net metering, customers may not get paid for all their generation, and so part of the language change in the Dash 2s accomplishes that. Also, as part of one of the workarounds, there was some thought given to the possibility of having the Energy Trust of Oregon, or more generally having some of the public purpose funds be used to accomplish one of the workarounds. People have raised a number of concerns about that, so a change that was made in the original bill has now been reversed in the Dash 2 amendments.
Good. Thank you. I want to return for just a moment to something you said in that explanation, the possibility of expanding beyond 25 megawatts if it makes sense. Speaking only for myself here, my interest remains in giving the PUC the authority to explore the question of how a feed-in tariff best works. Could you outline situations that might make sense in your words and how likely you expect that to be? My expectation is that we'll be able to do a good job of exploring the various questions within the 25 megawatts as described in 3039. I just want to understand how that might work.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, your expectation is the same as mine. I think we will be able to learn what we need to learn through a 25 megawatt pilot. It's difficult here because this is, frankly, a fairly expensive resource. And the commission has expressed to you on a number of occasions, in especially last session when we were first looking at House Bill 3039, its concerns about the rate impacts of acquiring this resource in any significant amounts. 3039 requires a number of reports, both to the legislature, and the commission will certainly be getting plenty of information from the utilities. That's something we've teed up in the rulemaking that we're getting close to wrapping up. I expect the commission will move very cautiously here in doing anything to go beyond 25 megawatts. And we'll certainly have plenty of information and plenty of opportunity for parties to weigh in if the commission is thinking about doing that.
Thank you very much. Are there questions
from the committee.
Representative Frederick.
Chair Reed, I am curious about this, and I'm coming into this very late, and I recognize that. But you have you have determined that the commercial, the small-scale commercial enterprises are between 10 and 100. Why the 100 figure? Why not something around 30 or 40?
Chair Reed, Representative Frederick, at this point, this really is all a matter of judgment. We haven't tried to run a program like this before. We're relying on a lot of the information that is coming into the workshops we have regarding how current programs have worked, how various size projects have worked out. The fact that they're called residential small commercial is not that important. It's really the size categories that matter. What these definitions are doing is saying that for projects anywhere between 70 and 100 kW, we have to dedicate 75% of the pilot program capacity here. And the commission will decide in its rulemaking and decision-making process how to divide that 75% up among projects that may be 0 to 10, maybe 10 to 25, 25 to 100. So the commission has that discretion under this language. And then the remaining 25% is designated for projects anywhere between 100 kilowatts and 500 kilowatts.
If I may, on a follow-up,
please.
Are you going to be encouraging or supporting the residential, the small residential, or are you going to be primarily focusing on commercial solar projects or other projects? What is there going to be a priority given to one or the other, or have you determined that yet?
Chair Reed, Representative Frederick, that's still a decision for the commission to make. There are a number of proposals coming into the commission now. In fact, the closing comments in the proceeding are due tomorrow. The PUC staff is recommending that of that 75% or so, that most of that, about two-thirds of that, would go to residential customers. That is the small 0 to 10 kW category. Other parties are making arguments that if you do it that way, there won't be room, in a sense, for many of the small commercial or medium commercial projects, you might call them. And so they have argued that more of that 75% share ought to go to those projects. That's a matter of a judgment that the commission will have to make, and it could be changed over time depending upon what we learn about where this approach works, where it's far superior perhaps to the other incentive mechanisms that are in place now.
Thank you
very much. Are there other questions for Mr. Sparling? I don't see any. I would like, if you're willing, for you to stay there, and we'll call some of the other folks up. I expect as we get through this, there may be some technical questions that you'd be well positioned to answer. So let's call Scott Bolton and Jeff Bissonnette, please. Let's see Jeff Bissonnette. So, well, we can call someone else while he's getting here. How about Seth Frickman, please? Seth, do you want to? Oh, yes. Okay. Thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Bolton.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Bolton. I represent Pacific Corp. We serve Oregon as Pacific Power, celebrating our 100th year of doing so this year in 2010. Real quickly, and hopefully borrowing some of the goodwill that may still be in the air from our collaboration with the EE bill and the biomass bill, I'd like to point out a few comments on 3690. 3690, our understanding, is really a technical corrections bill. As Mr. Sparling outlined, we've had some legal questions pop up during the rulemaking and implementation of House Bill 3039, a bill of which we were a supporter of. We supported that bill really to test the feed-in tariff model and have some real-world knowledge and data on how that deployment model measures up against other incentives and other ways to encourage customer generation. In 3690, there are a few areas that seem to go beyond where stakeholders were at in recommending technical corrections to the legislature. The two things that do need to be in 3690, in our opinion, is, as Mr. Sparling described, an extension of the time. There does need to be more work done among parties and with the commission staff in designing this program and making sure that it works for customers and is ready for subscribership, and the extension of July 1 is something that we support. And there are a number of tweaks within language that does help with the workarounds that Mr. Sparling described to try to find other incentive models in order to encourage this program in order to make this program attractive to folks who may want to put solar PV on their property. We do have some concerns. The primary concern that I'll direct you to is new language added in Section 2, Sub 1, last sentence, which deals with the issue that was raised earlier about permitting the commission to raise the pilot level from the original design 25 megawatts upon future commission proceeding and consideration. To us, that does seem to be some mission creep, the possibility of expanding the program before even 1 watt of solar PV has been deployed under this program. It does give us grave concern as one of the entities that will be asked to implement and administer this program, and we really urge this committee to not include this language in this bill. We also have some concerns around removing the definition of residential qualifying system, removing renewable energy certificates from the definition of resource value. We understand that this is a tweak to help provide more flexibility in the rulemaking. It's not something that is a must-have type of provision, but it is part of the original construct, and how you would look at renewable resources is to factor in its renewable attribute. And so the renewable energy certificate really is part of the resource value. It's how we would look at any other technology. We would just encourage and just place in the record that opinion. But for us, the main problem with 3690 as drafted is the expansion of the standard at this point. Be happy to take any questions.
I would note it's a potential expansion. Any questions? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, Mr. Bolton, could you just walk through a little bit more on Section 2, Subsection 1? And I apologize, maybe a simplistic question. So my understanding is that the addition here at the last line is that if the capacity limit of 25 megawatts is equal during the pilot phase, then the commission has the authority to expand the pilot program. Is that your interpretation?
Representative Bailey, I do believe that that's what the language intends. I think our perspective and our perspective in our original support for 3039 is that if you do get to that 25 megawatts fully subscribed, you have then your pilot. You have some data. You have some real-world information to then decide, you as policymakers, is this indeed a good model? How does this measure up with other ways to deploy solar? And is this indeed something that the entire state should share in at that point, not just the customers of investor-owned utilities who this pilot applies to?
Follow, Mr. Chair?
Please.
And I'm trying to make sure I understand. So I heard in your testimony, and perhaps I heard you wrong, a comment or a phrase, something to the effect of before 1 megawatt or before 1 watt has been deployed, I think was what you said. My understanding of this is that this trigger would happen after that 25 megawatt capacity has been reached. Is that not the case?
Representative Reed, Chair Reed, Representative Bailey, yeah, I guess I would look at it this way, which is rather than a technical correction or language to enable the commission to carry out a design for an incentive program for customer generation for solar PV, that this is a significant policy change in our opinion, that before this has even been finalized through rulemaking, we're already looking at potentially allowing the 25 megawatt pilot design to be altered and to be expanded. And the original design, as we understood and supported 3039, was that you would have a 25-megawatt pilot program, and through the regular reporting, as Mr. Sparling described, back to the legislature would be able to evaluate the efficacy of this program.
Other questions? Prickett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, my name is Seth Prickett. I'm representing the Oregon Solar Energy Industry Association. Coming before you today to express our gratitude for this committee for passing out the feed-in tariff last session and for taking up this bill, this supplemental session. The pilot program that was passed last session has the possibility of creating over 800 jobs for Oregonians in the solar industry. And I just came back last night from a feed-in tariff conference in San Francisco, where I learned that people have always kind of compared solar with high-tech and Moore's Law. And what I found out is that for every time you double the amount of installed solar, you decrease the cost by 20%. So I think this is very important for us to help bring down the cost of solar, as well as allow us to test a feed-in tariff here in the state and figure out the best way to integrate solar into our RPS.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Prickett?
Just a quick question.
Please, Representative.
Just in relation to Mr. Bolton's comment about that language that could be interpreted as mission creep, as a policy decision before we're done with the phase, how do you feel about that? Are you okay without that language?
As I, I was gone until late last night, and today's the first that I actually saw that language. So I don't feel as though I have the appropriate information to make a judgment at this point.
Oh, you're like me then. Good.
Thank you, gentlemen. Next two on our list, Jeff Bissonnette, Brendan McCarthy. Please stay.
Excuse my gravelly voice. Again, too much talking, I think. Chair Reed, members of the committee, Brendan McCarthy with PGE. Thank you for letting me testify today on this feed-in tariff fix bill. And I'm happy to be sitting here with our customer representative, Jeff Bissonnette. PGE has been a participant in the rulemaking that's been going on at the PUC to implement House Bill 3039. I've been there as part of our representation and watching as the difficulties with 3039 have unfolded. As I see it and the company sees it, what is needed to help 3039 be implemented is a fix to the FERC jurisdictional issues that came up that no one expected when this bill was discussed last session, and to give us some more time to work through some of those issues. This is a pilot, has already been said. Let's see what we can do with the pilot. Let's implement the pilot, find out how much it costs, find out whether it works, and then move on and see whether we need to make some additional substantive changes. As Mr. Bolton said, we do have some concerns about the 25-megawatt expansion. We have great confidence in the PUC that they will ensure that they don't do what is not absolutely necessary to do. However, when we look at the rate impact, we've tried to look at this 25-megawatt existing. Depending on what the rate is set for the incentive rate, we could easily reach the 0.25% cap that's in the bill already with the existing 25 megawatts. Just to sum up, it's a pilot, and I think to make any other changes at this point in time would be premature.
Thank you. Mr. Bissonnette.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette for the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon.
I'm here to support 3690. And I think I want to echo what you've probably already heard a little bit, but just to underscore it to some extent. Around November, so the question was kind of put to the working group as part of the rulemaking process: do we need any technical fixes? The answer at that time was no. A month later, the FERC jurisdictional issue, which I believe you've heard about, came up and said, "Oh, this is an issue that we had not anticipated." And so I think giving the PUC the express authority to have some creativity that we didn't anticipate them needed in order to implement the pilot, the legislature asked them to, was something that rose to the level of needing this fixed bill. The second issue is we continue to develop this on a very fast timeline, and I can say from a lot of years working at the PUC, an expedited procedure at the PUC is about 3 months, and 6 is often pushing it. It's a long, laborious process, and rightfully so. So we've literally been working at warp speed, and together came to the determination that the commission might need more time to really come to a good order, and so that's where the change from the April 1st implementation or approval date to the July 1st date came from. It doesn't help any of us as parties. We still need to get all of our stuff in on time, but it gives the PUC a little bit more time to make a better decision and get more information. Those are the two things that in our mind rose to the level of needing the technical fix bill in this session. The other items in the bill in terms of permissiveness to expand the pilot, in terms of designating smaller and not so small, and that sort of thing, are, you know, good for one group or another, but you know, we can support them being in there. If they were taking out, it wouldn't matter to us. So I think that you know, we support the bill. Some of the issues that are being raised, we don't really have a position on. If the committee decided to take them out, we wouldn't object. If the bill went forward with them, we would still support the bill.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for either of these gentlemen? I have a question for Mr. McCarthy. I'm hearing the sentiments you're expressing somewhat in line with what Mr. Bolton said, and it appears at least that my interest in that is not meeting with the same sort of interpretation from your perspective. So I wonder, is there a scenario, and I realize I'm to a certain extent putting you on the spot here, but is there a scenario where a language that might indicate the intent of that potential expansion being limited to answering questions that were originally contained in our pilot, would that make you more comfortable?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, and you're asking me a question I don't have a direct answer for. If we're talking about doubling the size of the program, and that is what that language potentially contemplates in the universe, we could go from 25 to 50. We are ultimately concerned about the cost impact to the customers of that program. Obviously, we could attempt to predict the cost by shoring up the language in.
Well, let me stop you for a second and see if I've not asked very clearly. I think you're right to say that as it is written, in theory, it could go up to any amount. I think it's also clear based on the testimony today that that's not the intent. So the question is there a number that would make you comfortable? I think what has led us here to even the existence of this bill in whatever form it currently exists is the fact that the PUC and the stakeholders who've been engaged in the rulemaking have encountered some things that we didn't expect. So I think it's possible to imagine that same scenario could occur going forward when we're not going to have a chance to come back as a legislature and address that. So we also don't want to miss the opportunity to get the answers about how this might best work as quickly as possible. So I think the intent clearly is to try to give the PUC and the rulemaking process the attempt to, or the opportunity to adapt a little if those things, if something unexpected happens. So are there limits that would get you comfortable with some more flexibility?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, thank you for the clarification. I would say that in my experience sitting through the many workshops on this fast pace that Mr. Bissonnette mentioned, I have not heard a specific concern that the 25 megawatts is in an adequate number as it is. There certainly have been people to suggest that feed-in tariffs, when they've been implemented across the country, have been enrolled fully to capacity very quickly. That obviously is a factor of how the program is designed, the feed-in tariff rate that's offered, and that kind of thing. I think that what you have in 3039 with the capacity amount that you have is enough to give the legislature the feedback that they're looking for to see whether this is a valuable program, whether this comes in, as the bill says in sub 12, I'm sorry, sub 13 in the report that's supposed to come back to the legislature, is supposed to evaluate this pilot program against the other systems of incentives that we have. The capacity of 25 megawatts should be plenty to do that.
So the short answer to the question was no?
The short answer to the question was no.
Okay. Thank you very much. Other questions for the panel? I don't see any. Thank you very much. Suzanne Lee Liu, last on the list.
Thank you, Chair Reed, and members of the committee. I'm Suzanne Lee Liu with Renewable Northwest Project. We're a nonprofit coalition of public interest organizations and renewable energy companies. I just want to say briefly, first, thank you very much, Chair Reed, for your leadership and for this committee's leadership in terms of moving this this particular bill forward, and actually during the last session as well, pursuing a pilot feed-in tariff for the state. We've been very involved in the regulatory process to implement the legislation, and I just have to really commend the Public Utility Commission and their staff for very quickly working on this very complicated rulemaking proceeding. There's a lot of different pieces that we're working through, and it's been a real pleasure to work with the Commission and a broad scope of coalition partners, including the utilities NCUB and OSEA, in that process. We just primarily wanted to let the committee know that we very much support the current bill before you, and thank you, Chair Reed, for moving these technical fixes forward and for your leadership. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have, but really I'm here just to let you know that we support this bill and urge you to move it out of committee.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Lee Liu? Thank you very much. Thanks, Mr. Sproul. I apologize for making you. It didn't turn out that there were technical questions, but I expected there might be. That meets with everyone's approval, I suppose. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3690. And open a public hearing on House Bill 3691. Beth, and while you're doing your summary, we have two people who have signed up, Jeff Bissonnette, Brendan McCarthy. Shouldn't have sent you away, I suppose. Sorry about that.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3691 allows above market costs associated with compliance with the renewable portfolio standard or a solar photovoltaic generating capacity standard to be recoverable in the rates of electric companies. In front of you, you also have a dash one amendment which removes reference to ORS 757.60 to 757.68.
McCarthy, Mr. Bissonnette. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to send you away. I wasn't looking far enough ahead in the list to realize you were going to be right back. Well, you can start, and hopefully he'll return.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, I'll be very brief. This is a small technical issue that came up, actually, in the discussions on 3039. broadly speaking, we discovered that there was a bit of an ambiguity in relationship to above market costs and the ETO statutes. This is a purely technical fix to remove that ambiguity. We've had conversations with the utilities, the Citizens Utility Board, the ETO attorney, John Volkman, DOJ attorneys, and PUC staff, and I think that this bill that's before you removes that ambiguity.
Could you, since you're there and Mr. Bissonnette is not, could you give us a little more background on the effect of the technical change?
Certainly.
Why it's important, what it does, please.
Certainly, Chair Reed, members of the committee. You see the language that's being removed in subsection 2. Costs associated with compliance with the renewable portfolio standard are not above market costs for the purposes of 757.600 to 689. In 757.612, which falls within that series, the public purpose charge is created, and the ETO, in a sense, or at least the authority for the commission to use the ETO to disperse those public purpose charge monies, is that system is set up. What that says is in the renewable portion of the public purpose charge that those monies are to be used to reduce the above market costs of renewable generation facilities. What you have here is language that says then that the costs associated with them are not above market costs. That led to a disagreement as to whether that meant the ETO could fund projects that would ultimately be used for compliance in the renewable standard and in the solar standard. The intent of this language originally was to ensure that, well, when utilities went to the commission to receive recovery on their investments, that these above market costs, because they're renewables, they might be more expensive than a non-renewable resource, that they weren't treated as an imprudent investment. That was why their language was there to begin with. I don't think anyone intended for renewables, a solar facility, to not be eligible for ETO funding. So that's the nut of this. It's, like I said, it's a little bit technical, but I think everyone is on board. And I'll let Mr. Bissonnette correct me if I've said something incorrect.
Thanks for the additional background. Mr. Bissonnette.
Again, members of the committee, Jeff Bissonnette for the Citizens Utility Board, and I apologize for being out of the room, kind of running back and forth between a couple of hearings.
It was my fault, too, for sending you away and not looking farther ahead.
I agree with everything that Brendan just said, and I'd go one step further that it was never our intention to even suggest that ratepayer money that goes to through the Energy Trust to support renewable projects could not then also be used to comply with the renewable portfolio standard. That certainly, if that wasn't allowed, what you'd be doing is saying ratepayers pay for renewable resources through the public purpose charge and then pay more for additional renewable resources for the RPS, and that was never our intention. And we kind of tried to look at the language in a couple of different ways and decided that the risk was just too great going forward. And so we had the ability to do this technical fix to clarify that resources that get contributions from the public purpose charge can be used to comply with the RPS, and that's all the bill does.
Thank you very much. Much clearer explanation. Appreciate that. Any questions from our committee? I think they want to leave. Thank you very much. While this bill looks to be a fairly simple and well-regarded measure, we don't have the required paperwork, so it can't move today. But just so you know that, we will ask if anyone else who wants to testify on this bill. Don't see any. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3691. And with the announcement that we will be carrying over House Bill 3644, House Bill 3633, House Bill 3691, House Bill 3690 to our Tuesday meeting on February 9th at 1 o'clock in this same room, we have, in the words of our revenue chair, exhausted our agenda. Unless there are any comments for the good of the order. We're adjourned.